Welcome to the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepanchik. On today's show, we'll feature a monologue on the eve of a key vote in the U.S. Senate about the future of the Internet, also about the future of media and the government policies that help shape them. We'll also feature a selection of news about media and democracy entitled Media Minutes. But now, a selection of news headlines courtesy of The New Standard.
This is The New Standard radio news update for the week ending June 16th. I'm Catherine Kump. A timber sale in the Oregon wilderness this month marked the Bush administration's first trod onto more than 58 million acres of previously protected roadless public lands. Environmentalists call the controversial logging plan an underhanded strategy to subsidize the timber industry and destroy Clinton-era rules barring development on wild lands reserved for recreational uses and conservation. The recent auction was in a pristine area of the Siskiyou National Forest, burned by the massive Biscuit Forest Fire in 2002. But Rolf Sklar with the Siskiyou Project said post-fire logging tends to impede the natural restoration process and increase the risk of future fire.
The Bush administration says, well, we need to log and replant because trees don't grow back after fires. And of course, tens of thousands of years of natural history argue against that specious claim. But also, recent studies put out by the Siskiyou Project, we actually went out on the ground and counted the seedlings. What we found was that there is a robust natural regeneration going on. You can see it with your own eyes.
Several states have sued the administration for its repeal of roadless protections, but some environmental groups, including the Oregon-based Oxygen Collective, say that more direct protest action may be necessary to stop corporations from axing the forests. Congress is considering a bill that would permit open ocean farming in federal waters, a practice in which companies breed thousands of fish in giant underwater cages located far offshore in the exposed sea. Supporters say the practice is needed to meet the growing demand for seafood and to decrease imports. But environmentalists warn that open ocean aquaculture causes pollution, habitat destruction, and the depletion of wild fish. Zach Corrigan is a staff attorney with Food and Water Watch.
Their bill is essentially a trust us approach. We'll, you know, limit the impacts to the environment. We'll protect local fishermen. But there's nothing in the bill that requires this to be done.
The National Offshore Aquaculture Act would allow facilities in nearly 3.5 million square miles of federal waters, known as the Exclusive Economic Zone. As the Bush administration seeks to expand tax shelters called health savings accounts, the program's critics say the move is just another attempt to coddle the wealthy under the guise of health care reform. With health savings accounts, people enroll in insurance plans with high deductibles and out-of-pocket costs in order to pay lower monthly premiums. When they do need medical care, enrollees would be able to bank on tax-free funds stored in health savings accounts. Some public advocacy groups say the accounts would not curb healthcare spending because people generally access medical treatment only when they need it. At the same time, the program would boost the wealth of higher-income individuals with fewer healthcare liabilities. The progressive think tank Center on Budget and Policy Priorities calls the accounts a tax windfall for the most fortunate. With the federal minimum wage stagnated at $5.15 for close to a decade, states from Maryland to Washington have recently passed legislation to raise their wage floors. Six states are also holding ballot initiatives in November to increase their minimum wages, including Arizona, Colorado, and Montana. But the fight for better wages hasn't been easy. Jen Kern is director of the Living Wage Resource Center with ACORN.
Why is there such a gap between public opinion on this issue and legislative action? And I think it's all about who these elected officials are listening to. And when you have organized money in the form of, you know, the National Restaurant Association and National Federation of Independent Businesses and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce coming down hard on these elected officials and also filling their campaign coffers versus you know, your average American who believes this is a fair and right thing to do. The elected officials are siding with the minority of corporate voices here.
Even where groups like Acorn have won state wage hikes, however, many families will not bring home enough to make ends meet. For instance, in California, where the minimum wage is on the verge of rising to $7.75 per hour, the lowest wage workers will still bring home only about half of what is considered enough to live on. The New Standard is a 100% reader-funded, independent, hard news website dedicated to current events reporting and investigative journalism that emphasizes the public interest. To read full coverage of these stories and more by TNS journalists, go to newstandardnews.net.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
Mergers amongst telecom providers and cable providers are the media consolidation of the new century. If the media consolidation of the last century was radio, newspapers, TV, we're now seeing the stakes get so much higher, where we're talking not just about outlets of information. We're talking about conduits of all content going into the future.
That's Free Press Research Director Russell Newman speaking about the proposed merger of Bell South with AT&T and the carving up of bankrupt cable provider Adelphia among the two largest cable companies in the country, Comcast and Time Warner. Not only will these acquisitions make the biggest phone and cable companies even bigger, it will result in AT&T, Comcast, and Time Warner controlling more than half of all broadband data connections in the country. Newman says in the face of what these firms have been up to recently, there's more than enough reason to try and stop these deals.
They're already fighting to shut down the internet via neutering net neutrality. They're raising prices while keeping up the promises about serving all Americans. They're handing over personal information about many folks to government eavesdroppers, and now they're asking the government to help them get even bigger.
The FCC is expected to take up the Comcast Time Warner Adelphia deal within the next month or two, while its proceeding on the AT&T Bell South merger has just begun. So far, more than 40,000 public comments have been filed in both dockets. The majority ask the FCC to nix the deals or impose strong conditions on them to prevent the companies that stand to benefit from leveraging their market powers to the detriment of everyone else. Newman says the avalanche of public interest in these deals has definitely made the FCC think twice about rubber stamping such transactions.
This should have gone through a long time ago. By the end of last summer, we were expecting to have already lost this thing, and the fact that it's dragged on till now speaks volumes about, you know, what can happen when folks lend their voices to debate like this.
Public broadcasting is back on the chopping block in Congress. Earlier this month, a subcommittee of the House of Representatives voted to slash more than $100 million from the budget of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a cut of nearly 25% from current funding levels. A week later, the House's full Appropriations Committee reduced the proposed cutback by $20 million. But the loss will still spell the end of several of PBS's educational outreach initiatives and may force smaller public radio and TV stations to close their doors. A Republican proposal to do away with all federal funding of public broadcasting by the end of the decade remains in play.
Losing the fight for internet freedom in the House of Representatives has not daunted the grassroots coalition working to get meaningful provisions protecting network neutrality endorsed by the Senate. In the last week, supporters of net neutrality delivered a petition with more than a million signatures to Capitol Hill asking the Senate to support the Internet Freedom Preservation Act, a bill with bipartisan sponsorship. But it's still an uphill battle. Phone and cable companies are flooding D.C. with hundreds of lobbyists, and key senators who control the fate of telecom-related legislation are still not convinced that network neutrality is such a big deal. Tell that to Craigslist, a member of the Save the Internet Coalition. Since February, users of Cox Cable Internet services have found it nearly impossible to access Craigslist.com. Cox blames third-party security software for the problem, though Cox supplies this software to all of its subscribers as part of its service. While all parties realize there's a problem, there is still no fix. Earlier this month, subscribers to Bell South's broadband service found their access to MySpace and YouTube temporarily blocked for about a day. Bell South blamed the problem on a misconfiguration. According to an unofficial tally of where senators stand on network neutrality, 13 have declared support for the principle, while 5 oppose it. 34 senators claim to be aware of the issue but will not yet take a position on it, while it's anyone's guess where the remaining 48 stand. You can find out more about the upcoming battle for internet freedom in the Senate by visiting SaveTheInternet.com.
Universal Music Group, the largest major label conglomerate in the music business, becomes the third company to admit to radio payola and settle an ongoing investigation into the practice by the state of New York. According to the $12 million settlement, several of Universal's labels plied radio stations with cash and gifts in exchange for artist airplay. They also hired people to call stations with song requests. This represents the largest payola settlement to come out of New York's ongoing investigation. Last year, Sony BMG settled with the state for $10 million, and the Warner Music Group paid out $5 million. Probes into the radio side of the scandal continue.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
You're listening to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepanchik. We now feature a monologue on the eve of a key vote in the U.S. Senate about the future of the Internet, in which we also talk about the future of media in the United States and the government policies that help shape them. This monologue is made with something of a heavy heart. As I write and speak these words on Wednesday, June 21st, 2006, close to 8:30 in the evening, I'm dreading the inevitable. The issue is one that I've been working on with increasing vigor for the last 6 months or so as I speak these words. It's the issue pertaining to the future of the Internet, and perhaps by extension the future of all of the media in the United States and perhaps beyond. It's an issue which has been summarized by a two-word phrase in policy circles as network neutrality or net neutrality. Last year, 2005, the Supreme Court made a very controversial ruling in a case where an internet service provider called Brand X had sued the Federal Communications Commission over discriminatory policies involving internet traffic. And that's opened the door for a ferocious battle, which has not gotten a whole lot of play, but which has nonetheless been very ferocious and very well funded, at least by one side in the battle. Involving the future of the internet and the future of the media. On the one side have been a small number of telecommunications and cable companies, companies like AT&T, Verizon, Bell South, Comcast, and so on, who want to basically turn the internet into their own for-profit fiefdom, where they could discriminate of content, create tiers of access, where incredibly high access and freedom of access could be awarded to those who would pay or pay a lot, and the digital equivalent of a dirt road for everyone else. Well, that's one side of this battle. And the other side is basically practically everyone else in the world, or certainly a lot of people in the United States, a good number of whom, some 700 organizations, have assembled in a coalition called Save the Internet, which you can check out online at savetheinternet.com. Despite the assembly of this coalition and a million people subscribing to an online petition which has been organized, as well as some upwards of 14,000 MySpace friends, thousands or close maybe even tens of thousands of bloggers who have commented on this, growing awareness to the point where even major media, usually print publications, but certainly a great many of online publications as well, have been chiming on the issue. Despite this, the House of Representatives voted to basically abolish the internet as we know it, a dreadful bill which was approved earlier this month on June 8, 2006. The Communications Opportunity Promotion and Enhancement Act, the COPE Act of 2006, was approved. And for anything to become law, companion legislation would need to be passed in the Senate. And that is what could happen tomorrow, June 22nd, 2006, on the eve of what could be the day before the internet could be changed, perhaps for decades, perhaps forever. By the time this broadcast airs and is podcasted, the issue could be over. The bill could live. There's one companion bill which has been proposed by Ted Stevens, a Republican from Alaska who's a senator there, who has basically all but squelched the issue, or at least initially, and has been incorporating, basically going along with lots of money and lots of corporate and well-heeled lobbyists to basically change the internet into the small protectorate of a small number of well-heeled corporations. The bill could live, the internet could die, or the bill could die and the internet could live. It could live. And that's been actually the best hope at this point, rousing public involvement and awareness of the issue. And in fact, there are some signs that this could happen. Earlier this week, Senator Ted Stevens had announced that there was a lot of... he was going to be making a lot of changes to the bill, which would actually harm a lot of the perhaps longer-term aspects of the bill passing in the Senate, or getting to a Senate vote, perhaps passing in the Senate, and perhaps further being reconciled in what's called a conference committee, where the influence of very well-heeled and well-connected corporate lobbyists could have a extraordinarily disproportionate say on the issue and what and what not, what could and could not get involved. So it could go either way as I speak these words. There was one internet post that I'll share now while I can still use the internet on a very excellent website called feministing.com. It's a website that reports about women's news and issues. And they had an interview that was posted today where they interviewed a co-founder of the organization MoveOn.org. Her name is Joan Blades. She had granted an interview to Feministing and talked about an issue that MoveOn, along as one of these coalition groups involved in the SaveTheInternet.com coalition, had chimed in on the issue of network neutrality. And she was Joan Blades was interviewed, and here's a portion of what she talked about in the interview. Proponents of the legislation are lobbying Congress to have less control of the internet. Lots of representatives voted against network neutrality. Now it's going to the Senate, and they're talking about June 22nd as being the date they'll vote on it. This deadline meets the interests of major providers like AT&T and Verizon, because they'd much rather have it sooner rather than later, because the longer it takes, the more time there is to work on the issue. These major phone and cable providers have put millions of dollars into this for years, and when I say into this, I mean members of Congress. It's very hard to tell people who have been giving you hundreds of thousands of dollars to not do what they ask you to. So it's bad news for us. It means that a big chance of mobilizing the base, which is not something as simple as you get it, I get it, right away. And so it's great that we've mobilized this many people, but it's going to be very dicey. And the nature of the internet as you and I know it is really going to change if we don't succeed here. You know, it's incredibly close. Joan continues to say, network neutrality is not on many people's radars. The issue is so much deeper than most people are going to go. It's one of those things where it was completely invisible until about a month ago. And so it's amazing to have a coalition of 700 organizations come together across the Gun Owners of America, a very right-wing pro-gun group, along with all the organizations MoveOn is traditionally associated with. It's a pretty amazing coalition. But then you have the other side creating ads that are very misleading, saying that we're trying to put restrictions on the internet, or close off traditional American values and free enterprise. That it's really the monopoly versus open free space. And so all of a sudden it becomes very confusing to people when they start seeing other ads. It's natural for organizations like AT&T to say, hey, this is wonderful. This is a huge new area for potential profits. But we know that huge new areas of potential profits for a couple of companies can lead to all parts of opportunities closing down elsewhere. They have control over a crucial part of the infrastructure. We thought we had it taken care of, but the fact is it passed in the House, although we did have some bipartisan opposition. But it's very, very, very close. And that was Joan Blades, on the co-founder of MoveOn.org, as interviewed on Feministing. Feministing.com is the website, which you can check out. Look for a post dated June 21st, 2006. My fear is that if we lose this fight tomorrow, that might be it. If a bill would get through in the Senate Commerce Committee, in all likelihood it may get through into the Senate, which may well rubber stamp this along partisan lines, and then would arrive at what's referred to as a conference committee, where the two bills that were passed in the House and the Senate may be reconciled or try to be reconciled, and where it's been commented that that's where the real decisions are made regarding this. And so I'm just afraid that this might be it. We may see the internet die here. There would be no further appeal, and we would watch the inevitable as these major corporations would basically be let loose to basically ruin the internet for their advantage. And I suppose this might be history repeating itself. We had seen a very similar fight some 80 years ago, around the late 1920s and the early 1930s, ironically enough, on this very medium, radio. The government had basically reallocated a lot of the radium spectrum to a small handful of major broadcasting interests. The main cable, radio networks of the time, CBS and NBC, along with General Electric, the Radio Corporation of America, RCA, and NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, who wound up being chosen the winners. A pretty serious ferment had arisen regarding the future of the radio, and by extension, the future of television, because that fight would actually set the stage for what would come in the coming years regarding television. And a pretty impressive coalition from across the political spectrum involving a lot of people and a lot of different groups and walks of life had assembled to try to fight and stop this, and lost. And I'm just afraid that we may be seeing the same thing again, fighting happening again now involving the internet. That we would then make decisions now that would set in motion infrastructure that would be very hard, perhaps impossible to dislodge in the United States. And it's more than just the internet, because that's going to be the basis of media for all Americans in the next few years. It's not going to be the case that you'll be, say, able to watch television over the air or hear radio over the air or get television via lines. It's going to basically be all digitized, and that digitization will rely on an internet infrastructure to be distributed. So I'm just afraid that the decision that could take place tomorrow, June 22nd, 2006, or depending on when you're listening to this today, would set the stage for the future of the media in the United States, perhaps for decades, perhaps forever. Now, it's entirely possible that some international event or series of events could force the United States to make better media policies. But then again, maybe not. And we've seen actually with radio where the rest of the world would actually take a much more sensible approach regarding the future of radio. The United States would basically ignore that, go its own way, and in fact set a stage for behemoths to run roughshod not only American media, but actually set an example for other media elsewhere around the world. And I'm just also afraid that a great much of the media that could be community-based media, I should say, which could prove very useful and very helpful for actually helping people rather than proving as a mechanism for major corporations to sell crap, that might actually lay the foundation for future disasters. The big example that comes to my mind and probably comes to that of a lot of people's minds now is that of Hurricane Katrina on the Gulf Coast in 2005, where an infrastructure of community media had been set up on an emergency basis and which proved to be extraordinarily helpful to help people, and which I fear we may lose, not so much with radio, but perhaps certainly with community internet, not just here in the United States, but perhaps elsewhere as well, that a great strength of that localism and responsiveness could disappear and so should calamity strike, heaven forbid, but should it still happen, that we may not have that media infrastructure in place to help ourselves and by extension help others. So I'm kind of, in a virtual sense, biting my nails here, and I'm just hoping that things go their way. By the time this airs, we may well know, and I'll certainly give an update on the Ministry of Truth. What I will do is to continue the fight and be heartened by what we have done and to continue to work on this issue and related issues to help to set the stage for perhaps bigger victories in spite of any short-term failures that we may encounter along the way. We'll find out soon. That was a monologue on the eve of a key vote in the U.S. Senate about the future of the Internet, which also discussed the future of media and government policies that help shape media. You're listening to the Ministry of Truth. We go out with a song by The Broadband, online at savetheinternet.com/broadband. The song is entitled God Save the Internet.
Hey, Mr. Telecom Man, God save the Internet. Don't change my reality. Keep net neutrality. God save the Internet. All I wanna be is free to choose where I get my music and I get my news, where I hook up with a creep or a bum. Just ignore it and drink a beer.